Hello there, one of our few listeners. I'd like to go ahead and apologize beforehand about how this episode is not particularly interesting or very good or funny. So that's probably why it took me around 3 weeks to get around to editing the thing, because I just couldn't give a shit about an episode that I didn't really find all that enjoyable to listen to. Hopefully you feel slightly different, and if not, I apologize in advance. Long hiatus. Welcome back to season two of Mouthfist on MediaGauntlet.com. I am Ryan Speck.
And I'm Steve Saunders. And Ryan pretty much said what I would have said if I was doing the intro.
Which is good, I guess.
I suppose, if you want to be compared to me.
Well, okay, never mind. Maybe we should scrap the whole thing.
Yeah, done. Bye.
Well, that was episode 10 of the Mouthfist podcast.
Really? We got 10 episodes already?
Well, strictly speaking, it's still the 11th episode, but I think it's episode 10.
Oh, yeah. That's right, because we had a zero and a half episode in there, too.
No, just a zero episode, because that thing never should have been released, but yet we did.
True. And this will be an actually rather short episode, because I actually have to get going soon, so we thought we'd fit this in.
So it'll only be 1.5 hours long.
Maybe. We might shorten it to 2 hours.
I will pad it out with Windows sound notifications.
Fantastic.
I'll just, whatever WAV files came in with Windows, I will stick in there.
Well, Ryan, what's new with you, man? What'd you do last weekend? You did something cool.
I slept. I ate pizza.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about... Oh, but... And?
That was it.
That was it?
Well, I slept and ate pizza in Chicago. But,
Chicago. And why?
In Chicago.
Why the fuck were you in Chicago?
Flew into Chicago for the Jamie Duffy Cold Waves Memorial Concert, featuring more fucking bands than you can shake a stick at.
Like who?
Well,
first, before you start, to any of our listeners who do not know who Jamie Duffy is, can you give us a brief explanation of who this man was and still is in our hearts?
Jamie Duffy was an engineer as well as mainly known as a guitar player and co-songwriter in many cases for Acumen Nation. Mm-hmm. He was the guitar player for Acumen Nation. Probably, I think he was the only other consistent member that had been with the band since it started. So everyone else had left and come back and done other shit. Him and Jason were the only people that were in the band the entire time, and he killed himself earlier this summer, which I only met him a few times, but he was always a really nice guy, so aside from really wanting to go see the bands that were playing, figured it'd be good to go out for, because we were gonna give some money for the family, but decided to go out and show our support in person instead.
Nice. I met him briefly, well, for a show I booked in a long, long time ago, that early in, back when they were Acumen. So, yeah, I was very saddened to hear about his death. And, but I was also jealous to hear about you going to Chicago to see, what is it? There was Hate Department and Cyanotic.
There was Final Cut, Cyanotic, followed by Icentilla. Mm-hmm. Hate Department, Clay People, Go Fight, which is Jim Marcus from DeWarzow, 16 Volt, Damage Manual, Acumen, also Czar, which is another one of Jason's bands, which is more of like a prog metal type of thing, and then Iron Lung Corporation, Chem Lab, and Revolting Cocks.
So basically, a show you would kill for, that I would kill for, and I'm sure I could fit in a very tasteless joke here as well, which I'm sure Duffy would have appreciated. But yeah, it sounded like an amazing show. I saw the pictures, saw what like you and Siebold were saying about it. Sounded awesome. I mean, it's Hate Department and 16 Volt are two of my favorite bands of all time. So, and then Acumen Nation and just wow.
Yeah. Like, I knew it was going to be a very odd weekend when we get off our plane and we're standing at a baggage claim at this giant dick shaped baggage claim carousel. And over on the other side of the penis, it like a guy walks up and picks up a guitar. And I'm like, holy shit, that's Steve White from Pig. I was like, oh shit, I'd go run around the giant penis shaped thing to talk to him, but I don't want to bother him when he's confusedly looking around for a ride, and I'm still waiting on my suitcase, which I just saw come out on the other side of the penis and was looping around.
That's the same Steve that's in KMFDM, right?
Yeah, now he's in KMFDM, and he basically, I think he just, if I remember correctly from the Facebook page for the event, he basically said, anybody want me to play with them? I got a ticket to fly out there. Can I play with anybody? So he ended up playing with, I think, Czar, and 16 Volt. He played guitar for.
Oh, badass.
And he came out and dicked around with a few other people, and then there was the big finale with everybody on stage. But
nice. I was gonna say like yeah when Steve's birthday. When KMFDM was in town and I was hanging out with him after the show and birthday shenanigans. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah, never did get to say hi to him, but yeah, he was on my flight apparently. Yeah, the show itself was chaotic.
It wasn't Caustic in the show?
Matt played some electronics for Chem Lab.
Cool.
There was quite a few Chem Lab members on stage. There's a shitload of people in Chem Lab. But yeah, I was glad that I got to go out a little bit the night before. We got into town, and then we kind of like, I had only gotten 2 hours of sleep, so I passed the fuck out for a few hours, and then got up, and we went out and saw Sean and the guys from Cyanotic over at their studio, where they were hurriedly doing a bunch of shit, and they were trying to practice and do some video, put a video together as a tour promo, and do all this other shit. And then Siebold showed up with his band at the studio to hang out for a little while Sean was busy doing the video. So I ended up getting to talk to Siebold for a while, which is good because it was hard to talk to anybody at the actual show. It was complete chaos, and it was loud as fuck the entire time. So yeah, it was a long-ass show. I mean, the doors opened at 6:30. Final cut went on at like 6:45. And then it went nonstop until about 1:30 in the morning.
Wow.
So it was a lot of fucking standing. So yeah, I finally got to meet Joseph Graham, one of our only listeners.
Yay! How's he?
I only got to see him briefly. I mean, it was total fucking chaos. I mean, early on, we were like watching the show, said hello to him, got to meet him in person, which was cool. And then like, then you get into the crowd, you start watching stuff, and over time, the place got packed fucking full of people. It was just complete insanity in there with hundreds upon hundreds of people packed into this room, which was a decent size. It was a nice venue, but at the same time, it was hot as balls because it was already super warm and humid in Chicago. And then pack a bunch of people in a room, and it's like the only thing that kept me alive was the fact that they would put pitchers of free ice water along with plastic cups up on the bar. And you could go get as much ice water as you want. So drinking ice water and taking an Advil are the only thing that kept me upright for the, like, fucking 7 hours of show that took place.
Just be glad you don't drink.
Yeah, everybody seemed to be drinking a lot. Blaine and John from Insight 23 showed up, and I hung out with them. Then Wade from Christ Analog showed up and saw him for a minute. There was pretty much somebody from every band ever in that room at some point or another, probably. But it was a good time. I mean, all the bands were good. It got progressively better as the night went along. I was interested to see Final Cut, but it didn't bring anything like amazing that I was going to remember for the rest of my fucking life or anything. But it was the first thing up. Up second was Cyanotic, and they like really brought the energy, and they were lots of fun, and they kind of like really kicked the fucking thing off. I mean, he did a really good job. I'm always proud to see Sean do well. He's like a little brother or something. you and a lot of other people talk about how much you like Psionotic. And, like, I was trying to tell him that while I was there, and he was kind of like, whatever. He's like, I don't think he gets that as many people actually like and are really, really like Psionotic as they do.
Maybe we can get him to listen to at least this part of the podcast, which is, I'll say, well, first of all, I saw the video, and my girlfriend and I were like, huh, does this look familiar? And she's like, yeah, why are you on stage, Steve? Apparently he dresses, like, he and I dress very similarly. But also the fact that the kind of music Sean makes, I'll just say it's like I'm talking to Sean. Hey, Sean, it's Steve. How you doing? I've been listening to industrial music for a fucking long time. And let me tell you, you nail exactly what I think industrial music should be. Not just industrial music, but what music should be. And is the closest thing that I can think of that is in my head as far as music goes, which, like, you seem like the kind of kid who watched Terminator and viewed it as a family comedy like I did. Like, I want to live in that future. Can I please? And then you have to tell people that you really don't want to because that makes you sound like a psychopath. But the bottom line is Psionotic. It's fucking amazing music. It encapsulates industrial for me. So,
yeah.
So there you go, Sean. That's the best compliment I can give to just about anyone. I'm not just saying that because, like I said, I never met you and I don't know you. I think we're friends on Twitter or something. But so I have no real kiss-ass reason. I just really love Psionotic.
And they put on a good set.
Yeah, it looked good. Yeah.
You would have enjoyed it. Mm. Ice Antilla was interesting because it was an acoustic set, and I wasn't sure I was going to give a shit because you know me, I don't really like female-fronted anything.
Yep, I'm similar. Yep.
I have a very limited taste for female-fronted bands. The only ones I can think of just off the top of my head are Voodoo and Garbage.
Mm-hmm. I like the more metal kind of stuff, but like Arch Enemy.
Yeah, but I don't know. Ice Antilla really impressed me, actually. I mean, partially because she was so emotional. You could tell the entire time she was trying not to cry.
Aww.
It's like the entire set was an acoustic set where it's just a guy playing, like, playing drums with a brush and another guy playing acoustic guitar and her singing. And the whole time she's, like, not making eye contact and, like, you can just tell by the tension in her jaw and the glaze in her eyes that she is, like, fighting off, trying to keep just singing and steady and not to break down in tears. And it was really sad, but it was really good, too. It was a really, really good set, right, especially since I came home and then I heard, like, a track that she did. And I was like, oh, that's very, very fucking different.
Yeah.
She's got a good voice. I really liked her. I believe her name is Brittany Bindrum.
Yeah,
she did a really good job. I like her. So, I mean, that was the one thing that was did not quite that fit in with the rest of it. It wasn't a bunch of, like, she was the only one that was not some, like, aging dude that had been around for a long time. So it was, she was the odd man out in this particular set, but she held her own in her own way, I guess. Then after her, it was Hate Department, which, mm-hmm,
favorite of ours.
Yeah, my favorite band. So I enjoyed that. I mean,
I'm a big fan of Hate Department as well.
Yeah,
we should get Siebel to listen to this. Why aren't you listening, Steve? Come on, man. What the fuck?
Because A, he probably has better shit to do.
We'll get Rob, because I know Rob's going to listen to this shit. So we should get him to.
Hopefully. But it wasn't my favorite songs. I mean, if you ask me to name two songs that he will probably play that I don't want to hear live, it would be New Power and Release It, and he played both of them.
But I saw a video of his New Power, and they nailed it, man. It was really good.
Oh yeah, yeah. He did a great job live. The night before, I was talking to him, and he was being all cagey about wanting to do anything anymore. Mm-hmm. He was like, well, I don't know if I want to release anything. He's like, I've got an album finished, but I don't know if I want to release it because I don't know if it'd be it'd be fair.
Did you stand up and go release it like that? That's what I
no no I no. It was the first time I had ever talked to him. So, and we're in like a warehouse while in the background, Sean and his band make a bunch of noises, and their drummer just continuously like is drumming and making constant noise for like an hour.
Well, I mean, like Siebold's a really talented guy. I mean, he has his own way of doing things, and it's usually like the right way. And I remember talking to him, like, I first met him in like, what, 1999 in like Spokane, Washington. And he was telling me that, like, I wanted him to play, like, are you gonna play Beat Me Up? Because I fucking love that song. And he's like, dude, that's like an old song. I don't want to play it. I don't even have that ready. We haven't even, the guys in the band don't even know it. And I'm like, really? That's like your best song ever. And that in, you know, Won't Stay Lit. And, but those don't usually, well, I think you sometimes, usually I've seen Hate Department perform Won't Stay Lit, but,
yeah,
which is like, you and I agree is their, I think it's their best song.
Yeah, I mean, music. When he was preparing for this show, he commented on the fact that he didn't have any of the fucking tracks anymore for most of the songs, so he had to reconstruct everything, basically, because he didn't keep any of that shit or something.
Wow.
As it was, he played New Power, Release It, Bitch, I Am Truth, and then did, for his last song, brought out his wife, Martin Atkins, Charles Levi, and Curse Mackey, and they did Insect Suspect.
Nice. Very nice.
Sort of had a little pig face reunion on stage. It was really fucking good, too, so.
His wife seems like a real sweetheart. She seems like
a really nice person. Every time I've ever met her over the years living in the Southeast when, like, Pigface or Voodoo would tour through there, she was always super nice and very cool to talk to. She would always make herself available before the show, usually just hanging around to, like, talk to people, so.
Seabolds make a great couple. You guys are so cute.
Yeah, they're adorable.
They're adorable. Hate Department, the hate couple. Yeah, so moving on with the... we can talk about Hate Department all day. We could do a whole episode on Hate Department, probably.
Well, yeah.
But 16 Volt, which you and I also agree about 16 Volt. Like, we're huge fans.
We love hate 16 Volt.
Yeah. Like I'll sum it up for our listeners, all three of you. It's that Ryan and I think, like, the first few albums of Hate Department, or sorry, of 16 Volt are, you know, so Wisdom, Skin, Let Down Crush, and then Super Cool Nothing are four of the best releases in not just cold wave, but like industrial music in general. And then we were like, what the fuck? And he comes back with like Full Black Habit, and we're like, what the fuck happened? Like,
and that was the thing. It was like, he spent years in between, like the last album was 99 and then Full Black Habit wasn't until what, 2005 or six.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a huge amount of time had passed during which he had broken up the band, had gotten the band back together, dicked around with demos, eventually formed a band like with other guys to perform live, then started writing with them, wrote a bunch of stuff with them, had a falling out with them, threw out all the stuff that he wrote with the rest of the band because he felt like they were taking over too much of the writing. Mm-hmm. Then wrote new stuff, and then eventually Full Black Habit, and it's like a big shrug. And he, I mean, he had like prefaced the album coming out with like, I want to take it back to like a combination of the sound of like Let Down Crush and Wisdom. I want to like take the more metal stuff and combine it with the electronics and make an industrial album. Then he comes out, and it's like a big meh.
Yeah, it's not terrible. It's just not like, I don't know.
It's not interesting. It lacks the passion and like catchiness of his other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and it's like, you know, I like Eric Powell personally. It's one of the 16 Volt was one of the first bands I ever booked back in like 1995 or 96. And and by the way, the first band I ever booked from out of town was Good Courage, if anyone's interested. But and I've always liked Eric, and I've talked to him over the years, and a little interesting fact is when I first heard about the comic book The Goon, I thought Eric had somehow went into comic book writing, and I realized there's two Eric Powells running around out there. I just haven't really felt the last two six. I mean, I still bought them. I still bought the last two 16 Volt albums, but I just don't feel it as much. I still find myself going back to the older 16 Volt releases. And, you know, hey, if Eric likes it and that's what he wants to do, great. You know, like, more power to him. It's and in 16 Volt versus Hate Department, the Remix Wars was I still play that. It's amazing. And so, you know, I mean, it's his music. He's a musician, and he's gonna progress how he wants to.
He's released as many albums since he broke it up as he did before he broke it up, and I don't think I like anything that he's done since 1999.
Yeah.
And it may say something that live, out of his little set that he played, the only songs that any newer than Let Down Crush were Alkali and Suffering You, which were songs that he demoed in like 2000.
I was going to say, a lot of people didn't like Super Cool Nothing, and I really, really love that release. So,
He did play a song off of Super Cool Nothing, too. He played The Enemy, which I still think is hilarious, because he specifically mentioned something about, like fuck record labels. Like, when he played the song, I was like, and he mentioned Slit Wrist Records, mocking Slip Disc,
yeah.
Which is funny because, like, he wrote that song, put out the fucking album. That, I mean, a large part of the chorus is the line, "This won't destroy me." And the first thing he did after Seagram's bought out Mercury and immediately shut down Slip Disc was quit.
Yeah.
After doing that song and talking so hard about it, it's like, well, fuck it, I quit. It's like, this won't destroy me, P.S., I'm done.
Yeah, but you know, you can only take so much bullshit. Like, I don't.
But he quit for one fucking year. It was 12 months. It was one calendar year of quitting before getting back together again.
Well, that's not really quitting. That's taking a year off.
But hey. But when you announce "fuck it, I quit," and then a year later you're like, "Okay, fine, I'm back."
I snorted. Yeah. So yeah. I mean,
it was just the type of thing that I found hilarious at the time, yeah. And like. I don't know. I mean, at least now all of his, the first several albums have come back out. The first three Reconstruction albums are now back out on Metropolis in the past, like, several months, so.
Did the set kick ass, though?
It was pretty good. I mean, he did a good job. As much as I don't care about 16 Volt anymore and haven't given a shit about them in, like, a decade, it was a good set. I mean, they played Enemy, Suffering You, Alkali, Cut Collector, Swarm, and Motor Skill.
Nice. I still carry a torch for you, 16 Volt, even if I don't like your last couple albums. I'm still there. Still there for you.
Yeah. I mean, in the first album, he was trying to, like, ape old Revco and Ministry. Mm-hmm. And the second album, he was trying to ape Revco and, like, newer Ministry, and then it was, like, the third album he just, like, changed styles entirely. I kind of preferred the first two albums. I mean, the third, like, Let Down Crush was great when I was a fucking not-getting-laid 19-year-old who was deeply bitter and needed to stick his dick in something to calm the fuck down. But once you get older, you're like, oh, for fuck's sake, I can do without this.
Well, that all said, thanks to Eric Bell for playing that show, and I'm glad it was a good show.
After Hate Department, Blaine said to me, like, I would hate to be a band following that up. He's like, because I don't know who the fuck is going to be able to follow that. And then Clay People came on, who I'd never seen live. I think the only time they were going to come through Atlanta, it got canceled at the last minute, probably because the club sucked cock. Mm-hmm. There was a few bands that had to cancel from there because they were worried their fucking equipment would get blown up by the shitty power and bad audio layout in this shit club in Atlanta. So this was my first time seeing Clay People. I had met Dan Neat when he toured with Acumen years ago, doing the whole little ILC thing on the side. They would do, I think it was Bile, Acumen, and then they'd do like a little ILC set where they do their thing. And he was a super cool guy. I really liked meeting him. But I'd never gotten to see Clay People. And it's like, well, apparently they had kind of had a falling out. Clay People hasn't gotten together in several years. But they got back together for this show, I guess, which I think Dan Neat had said something about Jamie's death bringing the band back together again. Because I know the drummer and guitar player. So it was drummer, guitar, and Dan Neat. So. And then the bass player was Elliot Engelman, who used to be with Acumen Nation. Mm-hmm. So it was just a four-piece, but they fucking tore that shit up.
Yeah, Clay People's always been like, they were always that band they owned live. Like, people always say, oh, you got to see them live. And I saw videos, and I've seen them live, and I was like, holy shit, they're great live. And then on disc, they were just they
had their moments. Like,
they had their moments, yeah.
Like, but I knew a lot of people who really liked Iron Icon. I didn't really care for it one way or the other. I have like all their albums, but I liked Stone because it was very different. I mean, it was made as a demo basically to try to get on a label, And then, like, after it didn't go anywhere for a while, Chase is like, I'll put it out. I mean, my favorite song is still Spider's Bride, which is the least Clay People song they've ever done. I think it was also Chase's favorite, too, because he put it on the 10-year Reconstruction compilation CD.
And then there's Iron Lung Corporation, you know, like, which yeah. is...
Which was like a little dick around project when Clay People and Acumen were touring together. They do little yeah. encores together, and they do kind of a medley of Murderous and Join in the Chant.
Right.
Which Chase was apparently like, this is fucking awesome. Are you guys going to record something together? And they were like, yeah, sure. Like, he's like, I'll pay for a CD if you guys will do something. They're like, yeah, all right, we'll take that money. And then they apparently bought a bunch of weed and basically turned a few like took a couple old Acumen songs, a couple old Iron Lung Corporation songs, and then made a couple new things and pumped out an album for some extra cash.
Yeah, but and Clay People sounded like too.
Was impressive. Like, I was surprised by how impressive Clay People was. I mean, played Awake, which I like, and I played Pariah, played Mechanized Mind, played Car Bomb. So it was really good. I mean, it was. I was surprised by how great they sounded live, and managed to pull off those fucking crazy tribal sounding drums.
Right. What else? Like, is there anything else that...
Damage Manual was probably the least interesting thing of the night. It was just Chris Connolly and Martin Atkins. Martin Atkins lightly kind of playing, like, a little standing couple drums on stage, and Chris Connolly playing acoustic. And it was all old Damage Manual songs. It was none of the stuff off of Limited Edition, which I love Limited Edition, probably because Seabold co-wrote the album.
Right. Well, I was going to say, Mark, anything, it's, you know, nothing against him personally, but most things that Mark and Atkins has done, I've never really liked too much. And I could quickly tell the story. I don't know if I've told the story before about Martin Atkins yelling at me on the phone. But back in the old days, and I lived in Spokane, I was asked if I wanted to book Sheep Department and Test Department and Sheep on Drugs, which if, you know, like, an Eastern Washington town of like 200K people, like in the middle of the 90s, that's like a suicide letter. Like, you know, no, I'm not going to book them. I have a hard enough time bringing people into like shows that in having disasters and, you know, like this is a hard town to sell Nine Inch Nails in, for fuck's sake. Why the hell would I do this? Cause I saw that. So I'm like, well, let's just send me the writer, like send me like what you guys are looking for. And then I get the thing in the mail, and I go, oh God, no, I can't do this. And I'm going to lose my ass. Like, I'll have to literally carve my ass off and sell it in the black market. And I told the gal on the phone who worked for Invisible, I can't do this. And she was like, it was almost like I told her that I can't, I you know, that money I took from your grandma. Yeah. I can't pay her. And because she had this very, grave tone. She's like, oh, well, Martin isn't going to like that. I'm like, I almost said, I don't give a fuck what Martin thinks. Like, I'm just some schmuck promoter in like Eastern Washington who's barely scraping by, you know, like, no. And so I politely tell her and everything, I can't do it. And then I get this phone call a little bit later, and it's this British dude on the phone, and he starts yelling at me. And talking about, I need to know, you know, you need to know the business, Steven, and going off on me. And I'm all, who the fuck is this? And he's like, this is Martin Atkins. And I'm like, why are you yelling at me? And I'm like, my next thing was like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And so anyway, he yelled at me for a bit. And so I took a deep breath, put the phone down, came back. He was still talking. And then he said, are you there, mate? And I just started off on him. And you know my temper, Ryan. Well, me and my... early 20s was like more psychotic. So I completely like lost my shit on him, saying that I was going to get, I'm going to save all my money, and I'm going to come over to Chicago, and I'm going to fucking stab you to death. And that's it. No one talks to me this way. I can't do the show. I've never signed anything. I haven't promised anything. I haven't said I would do it. I said I was interested in seeing the writer. Those were my exact words. And so I told him to go fuck himself. And if you call me back, I'll tell you to go fuck yourself again. And I hung up on him. And then he called me back, and I told him to go fuck himself again, and hung up the phone. And that was the story. And years later, I am in Seattle at a Pigface show, and he starts talking to me for some reason. And I point out who I am, and he just laughs. And then I realize that he's not a bad guy. You know, I've heard a lot of stories about him that weren't good and stories about him that are good. He's a human being like anybody else.
Oh, yeah. So, like the only time I ever talked to him, he kind of yelled at me.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah. Oh, that must be a good story.
Like he had come through with Pigface like every fucking 6 months for a while around the like United tours. Mm-hmm. I think it was the United 2 tour at the Masquerade. He plays. He's looking fucking exhausted, and he looks like he's ready to just go home and be done with it. He's so tired, and obviously that was, I think, the last time, maybe the last tour Pigface ever did.
Mm-hmm.
But I jokingly, like, waved as we're, like, leaving the venue. I was like, it's good seeing you. See you again in 6 months. And he was like, all right, see you when Pigface comes back through in 6 months. And he was like, he was like, fuck. He's like, I've got a family. I've got a family. I've got to go home. I got to take care of people. I can't just be touring all the time. It's like, okay, I was joking, but
this is jerky because he pays so much. Yeah.
Like, as he like angrily starts yelling about how tired he is and like how he's got kids at home that he hasn't seen.
Oh, no, Mr. Atkins, you're not a bad dude. So it was
some people despise him that have had like dealings with him on his label. Some people hate him. Some people love him. I mean, I don't care. I don't know him. It's not my place. I don't give a shit. I mean, if he's a good drummer, I'll give him that. I like watching him play. I like Pigface. I loved watching Pigface after Easy Listening. Like, that gang of people he put together with Michelle and Seabold and Curse Mackey and sometimes Jared and all these random assholes that he put up on the stage, they gelled really well, and it was the best version of Pigface I've ever seen. I don't care if it doesn't fucking have, like, Ogre or Genesis Porridge in it or
no, whatever. that was an excellent incarnation of Pigface.
Yeah, I mean, that was the most fun to watch, so.
Okay, so
Damage Manual, not interesting.
Okay.
Which is meh. I don't care. I mean, sadly they didn't play any of the songs I liked, so I don't care. But yeah.
Considering the circumstances, it was great that they did something, so.
Yeah. And then after that was the set. First to start out was Czar with Jason, his bass player, and is it Dan Brill?
Mm-hmm.
I think the former drummer for Acumenation. The three of them playing, and it's like prog metal-y type stuff. And I don't really care. I mean, it's okay, but I mean, it's definitely not something I have interest in. So they have like they play like three songs or something. Then it shifts into Acumenation. Basically, all that happens is I think Elliot Engelman comes out on stage, takes over the bass from the dude, and the dude that was playing with Czar grabs a guitar. And then they go into Rally and Sustain, and they play some of the newer Acumen stuff. And then Elliot and the guy from Czar leave the stage, and Greg Lopez and Ethan Novak come on stage. And I forget who else played guitar with them. I think Steve White may have come out and played some guitar, too, with Acumenation.
But
they went and they played a bunch of, like, the old shit, because they said they were playing a lot of Jamie's favorite stuff. So, I hadn't seen Greg Lopez play with fucking Acumen since the tour right before Territory Equals Universe came out.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they even did the old shit where him and Ethan would switch out between, like, bass and drums. Which is a terrible idea if you think about it for a band that switches bass and drums in the middle of like the set multiple times.
Right. Did they do Ventilator Live?
No. They did FWM. They did No Arms, No Legs. They did. They played Queener, which I hate, but. I just never really got why the fuck that song existed. I don't think they played anything at all off of More Human Heart.
I think that's my favorite Acumen Nation album, too. Oh, well.
It's a toss-up for me between, like, the first half of More Human Heart and the large majority of Fifth Column.
yeah, for me, it's Territory, Eagles Universe, and More Human Heart. Although I like Fifth Column as well. So it's a those three albums are what in their first album, because that's how I first heard.
It's like
Acumen.
I don't love Acumen. It's like it's a band that I like a few tracks here and there from. It's like the first album. I don't really care that much about Gun Lover. I know everybody loves that song. I just listen to the Thug Mix of Matador off of the Reconstruction compilation Thugs and Kisses, because mm-hmm. that was a better mix, I thought. Mm-hmm. And Anchorite.
Right. I remember there was like a They sent me a tape, which is a fifth column record sampler back in the day. And I'm like, I'm a DJ. What do I do with a tape? But I still played it like in Matador and Gun Lover were on there. And it was at the time it was new and interesting. So, I mean, to their credit, there was a new that whole movement. And I assume after them, it was Chem Lab.
After them, it was Chem Lab. He announced at the end of the set that Chem Lab is retired. It was the last show ever. He's done. And he's going to do Prude next. I don't know who's still going to be in Prude. It was before it was going to be like a project between Sean Payne, Matt Finale, and Jared.
That sounds awesome.
And I don't know who all is going to be in it now, but he's not going to do Chem Lab anymore. He's just going to do Prude. Mm-hmm. And Chem Lab is done, which makes sense. I mean, if you think about it, there's only been, what, three albums and one EP over 25 years or something?
It's like, yeah. And Chem Lab stopped being, like, Eastside Militia,
I did not care that much for Eastside Militia. A lot of people fucking love that album.
Burnout at the Hydrogen Bar is where it's at, dude. That's the album.
I think they played like one or two of the songs from Eastside Militia. I don't even remember. Since obviously I do not give that much of a shit about Chem Lab at all. And they played I think Codeine Glue and You and Suicide Jag and Summer of Hate. So
Chem Lab was an interesting band in my own personal history, because I, the first time I'd ever heard Chem Lab, I had went to Angst Fest in, like the tour in early 1994.
Yeah, I missed that one. I caught the next one. So otherwise I would have seen that too.
And I was like, I was 18, right? Mm-hmm. So I was 18, May of 94 and in Seattle, I saw Deviate and, I remember it was Diatribe and Chem Lab, Sister Machine Gun, and KMFDM. And Chem Lab, my impression of Chem Lab was the music is really cool, but boy, that guy can't fucking sing to save his life.
Like, that was my feeling.
Tone deaf. My thing was like, he was fucking tone deaf. And that was my impression of Jared initially. And
that was like, it was the same way, especially me seeing Pigface with him several times. I'm like, this dude just cannot fucking sing. It's like amazing they can make him sound tolerable on an album.
Yeah. And then I went back home and from Seattle to Spokane. And then I met a girl at a coffee shop, started dating her because I was wearing my KMFDM shirt. And she actually knew the guys from Chem Lab, because she went to school back east and she covered a lot of stuff. She's the person that got me, like, I was already into industrial music, but she's the one that got me into the industrial scene. And so she was like really into Chem Lab. And I'm like, and also the other thing I liked about Chem Lab was the Fuck Art, Let's Kill t-shirt. That was like a big selling point for Chem Lab. But and I love their, was it 5-ton pressure?
10-ton pressure.
Or sorry, where did I get 5-ton? Oh, Fifth Column, that's what I'm thinking of. 10-ton pressure. And the Magnetic Field remixes of Burnout. So those that's like cyberpunk. It's very, but yeah, I just couldn't. And then Eastside Militia came out, and I kind of lost interest in Chem Lab. Jared's a really nice guy, though. Having talked to him a few times, he's a cool dude. And I just never liked his live vocal style, is all. So I don't know.
He actually did it a little bit better this time. Apparently, he was also like not drinking, and he may have been completely clean, which would be impressive if he was completely clean. But he's definitely like off alcohol completely, because he brought a bottle of Jameson's up on stage. He had Kirsch bring it out to him because that was Jamie's favorite, and he didn't drink anymore. But he made everybody else, and in the front row of the audience, he poured it into everybody's mouths and all the band members. He made everybody else drink it. But he and Matt couldn't,
right?
Since they don't drink anymore.
Right. Well, that's good. Good for him. I'm glad he's cleaned up a bit. So that's good. Good to hear.
Yeah, but he seemed to have a lot of fun, and it was at least interesting to see the last time they'll ever play.
Yeah, I wish I'd been there.
Yeah, I felt the same way after, like, about missing the last Christ Analog show and the last De Warzow show, which I've still never actually seen De Warzow. Go Fight did play, which Go Fight actually went on, I think, maybe before Acumen Nation. Mm-hmm. Go Fight, like, is Jim Marcus's new thing. It's very De Warzow-esque, as you would imagine, but a little more, like, dancey and hard, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's got a little bit of a harder sound, and he played the De Warzow mix of Wired.
Hmm.
Since, I mean, he did most of the fucking vocals for that song anyway.
Right. Wired from Sister Machine Gun?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he did that and then did Land of the Free and I think maybe Strike to the Body.
Nice.
I forget, but nothing off of a big electric metal bass face, which is my favorite De Warzow album. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's mine as well. Cool. Well, anything else you want to
Revolting Cox play last?
Oh yeah, Revco.
And it was
so irrelevant.
It was Chris Connolly on vocals, Paul Barker on bass, Eric Powell on guitar, and I forget who played drums.
Rifflin. It looked like Rifflin from the pictures.
Really?
William Rifflin? I don't know. Yeah, I saw pictures.
I don't think it was
the old bespectacled man. As I'm like, that looks like Bill Rifflin.
I don't know. Could have been, but I don't know if they mentioned it, but I'd have to look at back at the pictures, but it could have been Dan Brill as well. He played drums for a lot of the bands that night, but and also what's his name, Dwayne Buford, was there playing keyboards.
Cool.
So they actually had three of the old members of Revolting Cox there, and then they played for a while, and then did a pretty good set, played Beer Steers and Queers, played Something Wonderful.
Do You Think I'm Sexy?
No, didn't play it. Oh. Did play Physical.
Mm, nice.
They brought out Jason Novak and somebody else, I can't remember who, to do vocals on Attack Ships on Fire.
Mm-hmm.
And did Stainless Steel Providers. I mean, it was good to see. I mean, it was the only time I'll probably ever get to see Paul Barker play bass live.
Wow, that sounds like a historical experience.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, there was some of fucking everybody there. I mean, the guitar player from Mindless Faith was playing guitar for Chem Lab. There's like people showing up playing in every fucking band. I mean, a lot of it was like just thrown together bands, obviously.
Nice. Is there anything else you want to add about your weekend there?
I mean, nothing really pertinent or all that interesting. I mean, I did some sightseeing around Chicago with Blaine and John from Insight 23, and Blaine is also now with Idiot Stare.
Nice.
So, did sightseeing with them and talked about music and shit with them for probably 12 fucking hours.
Right on, dude. See, my and, weekend.
Yeah, I did not get to meet as many people as I wanted to because obviously, but they tried to keep the set changes in between everybody down to like 10 to 15 minutes. But with that many bands, it was just like a grueling like 6 hour period in a hot room standing. So my lower back was killing me. My legs were killing me. I was sweaty. I felt terrible. And then they wanted everybody to get the fuck out of the venue. So I feel like I could have seen a lot more people while I was there, but I did not get to. Got to see the guys from Cyanotic quite a few times. Got to see their manager, who I hadn't seen since he was staying at my house or something in 2002 or 2003 when Cyanotic was on their first tour and they stayed at my house. Somehow they still have the same manager after all this time.
Be a good manager.
Yeah. Of course, nobody else in the band is the same except for Sean, but it's just him and the manager stayed consistent. But I got to see Matt for a minute, gave him a hug, and that was all I really got to see of him. It's like, didn't really get to talk to many people because it was just so chaotic. Most of the people were staying backstage. Outside, there was a DJ going in between, so it's like loud music, so you're yelling over fucking music in between. So my voice was already blown out by halfway through the show. So it's like, it was probably not the optimal way to go about it. It would have been great to have like silence or either really low music in between so people could talk, since it was such a social event.
Right.
And it would have been great to have it over 2 days so it wasn't quite so grueling, and people would probably feel a little more like talking thereafter and shit like that. But at the same time, it was a fucking memorial. It's not a festival. I don't expect them to do that. They wanted to just get the thing done and kind of celebrate Jamie's life in the best way imaginable. I mean, I thought by the time Clay People was done that if it had ended there, it would have been one of the best shows I had ever seen. So the fact that it kept going. Oh, another person I forgot. Howie Benno from 13 Milligram played bass for Chem Lab. So
nice. I remember when they played in...
Never seen them. 13 Milligram, one of my favorite bands. Never seen them live. Yeah, that's the way with a lot of my bands that I love, because I was out on the East Coast and didn't see shit.
I was working for a bar, and they were like, "Oh yeah, we want to book this band. Have you heard of them?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, I know who those guys are." So, yeah, it was like Sister Machine Gun, and was Sister Machine Gun on that tour?
That would have been good to see.
Maybe I'm thinking of something else, but anyway, yeah, it was like the '90s or Blur. So,
I ended up seeing Thrillkill Cult a dozen times instead. Because every tour they did, they would always come through Atlanta. Always had an Atlanta show. So I literally saw them on every single tour they did from fall of 1995 until they did that big tour with Ministry. Right. Like a few years back. I saw every tour in between. So yeah, that was the big Chicago experience. That was, had my deep dish pizza, saw a bunch of bands play, did get to see a few people. Wish I had gotten to see a lot more. It would have been great to, like, I mean, there's so many people it would have been nice to at least say hello to or like talk to. Like, obviously, Joseph. Mm-hmm. Joe, I would have liked to have talked to for quite a bit more time since we barely saw each other. We missed getting together on Thursday night at Sean's studio. Mm-hmm. He left before I got there and went out like drinking and clubbing, and then more drinking and clubbing. I mean, I guess everybody went drinking and clubbing after the show, but my body is not made to do that.
Right.
Standing upright for 6 hours shit. So we're old. So
I carry Advil with me at all times, man. I was going to say my weekend was not nearly as exciting, although, and even getting to talk to the woman who plays one of my all time favorite comic book characters didn't even compare to your weekend. So what's that?
But that is very cool that you got to do that interview. I mean,
I was going to say my weekend consisted of my birthday was Monday. So I'm all of 37 years old now.
Happy birthday, you old fuck.
Thanks, motherfucker. And I spent the next day being sick. Let's see. I also, 2000 AD asked me to, through a strange set of circumstances, I interviewed Olivia Thirlby, who is the actress who plays Judge Anderson in the new Dread 3D film coming out September 21st in North America. So that should be up on the 2000 AD site probably before this is edited and everything like that. So,
Yeah, she was not, like, seeing the trailers and stuff, she is not the actress I would have imagined for the role.
You know, me either.
She seems like a cute girl, but at the same time, like I would have thought they would have gone for somebody a little bit older, maybe. And also, like, I mean, I thought they might have gone for somebody a little more well-known, because she had been in virtually nothing.
Well, that's the thing, is, like, I think they wanted an unknown at a lower budget. She's very short, apparently, and she doesn't really seem like Judge Anderson off the bat, but they needed somebody kind of young and had this kind of naive charm to him or whatever. But my experience with her, I only got to talk to her about all of 15 minutes. And she is an incredibly sweet, nice person. Like the my impression of her was she's very funny. She likes to talk. I don't know if she would be my first pick for Judge Anderson, but then again, who would be, right? And she didn't freak out when I told her that I have an action figure of Judge Anderson on my desk. I didn't tell her about the nipple thing on it, though. But I'm a big fan of Judge Dredd. I mean, as our listeners know, I'm a I've been reading 2000 AD since 1982. So I'm an enormous fan of Judge Dredd and 2000 AD, and being able to do an interview for their website was like fucking awesome, man. So, and on my birthday, I've had like the best birthday, new job, new, you know, this and that, and interview and blah, blah, blah. So still not as cool as going to Chicago to see that show. So yeah. Fuck you, Ryan. But yeah. I don't think we actually have time to discuss what we were going to talk about. Maybe let's give ourselves like 5 minutes to discuss this last thing.
Or we could always save it for another podcast very soon.
We could. We can give our thoughts. We could probably see how this plays out. But yeah. We saw like that thing was with Amanda Palmer, who raised $1.2 million on Kickstarter to go on tour, and now is to asking people to play for her for free, like, you know, like her
because she can't afford to pay about the $35,000 estimated that it would cost to have a live band, which is what you charge the ticket cost for, is to pay the people in the band. Like, that's the type of shit that only seems to, like, it would go over the head of people that have no experience with the music industry.
I think she should explain herself more when she put that open call out, because she sounds, to professional musicians or anyone who's worked in the music industry, she sounds like a dick. Like, yeah.
And apparently in her blog post where she brought this up, like, her, like, professional musicians went into the comment section of that blog and fucking took her to task, fucking put her over a barrel on the fact that she's basically disrespecting professional musicians by saying, like, well, I can't afford to pay, so every town I go to, I need... And we're not talking about, like, a fucking guitar player and a drummer and shit like that. You're talking... She needs a string quartet and a brass section in every town she goes to, and for them to provide their own instruments and to play for, like, the fun of playing with her and hanging out and maybe some beers or something.
While she rakes in the money... Because she's not exactly an unpopular performer. That's the problem.
I don't know why people like her. It's like one of those things that a while back when I kept hearing her name, I had to fucking look her up, like Emily Autumn, and be like, why the fuck do people like this?
I'll field this one. I'll take the heat. Fine. Because she's married to Neil Gaiman. That's why. So she's married to the guy. She's married to the guy who wrote Sandman and made every teenage girl and post-teenage girl wet in her pants for comics. I mean,
I get it. That is
as lewd as I'm probably ever going to sound and shit like this. So I love Neil Gaiman, by the way, and I don't really care about Amanda Palmer, but
she's married to an overestimated author who's given way too much credit.
I disagree. I think Neil Gaiman is a fantastic writer and creator and is a super nice guy. And you know what? She could be really nice too. So I don't want, you know, Amanda Palmer fans like lynch me. I was being pretty facetious earlier, but I don't, her thing doesn't appeal to me. It's like, it's not my thing. So if someone else's thing, great. I don't give a shit. But it's just that I think that I like to see how this whole thing plays out with her asking people, because I know Tom, and I found about this because of Tom Shear, who does Sinless 23. He blogged about it. Like, he's pissed. So, I mean,
And he also posted a link to the original article he read about it that kind of pointed back to her blog post along with reactions from other musicians and stuff like that. Also, somebody in his comment section said they personally experienced her coming to town and doing a show. And then, like, she will occasionally do stuff like on Twitter. She'll be like, before I do the show, I'm doing like a little public thing in the park where I'm going to show up and play a few songs. Mm. And it's like, oh, cool. Because you know how comedians, like Dave Chappelle has done that before. I think he did that at fucking like Pioneer Square or something like that in Seattle. Just showed up and did a show, like told people online, like, hey, I'm doing a show. Come down here in like 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And like did a live performance for everybody. So apparently people showed up to see her do her little thing before the show that people had already paid a lot of money for, and then she, like, they wanted to charge people $10 to watch her. Or, in this case, £10 to watch her, but...
Mm-hmm.
So, they paid, like, £50 or whatever for a ticket, and then a lot of the people came down early to see her do her other thing, so they wanted another £10 on top of that. To stand around outside and watch her dick around for, like, a few minutes.
Yeah, so just so you guys know who are, like, artists and writers and performers, don't fuck people over. Just stop. I mean, that's fucking someone over. Like, when I ask you for, like, if I'm a friend of yours especially, but you're an artist, and I go, hey, I buy one, I sit there and I drop money on one of your comic books, so when I ask you to, like, sign my book or whatever, don't charge me $10. And this is similar. It's an ambush thing, so...
Yeah. They can't be that hard up for money between the two of them. They got to be doing pretty well. So you'd think she'd have a little more like artistic acumen to want to provide people with a chance to see her without fucking extorting money from them. It's not like she's broke and has to like rape people just to pay her bills. I think she's pretty okay.
Well, she raised a $1.2 million on Kickstarter,
which
is
which was supposedly to cover a variety of things, including like an art thing she wanted to do, maybe some recording. It was like a whole array of different projects all under one umbrella. But one of the things was supposed to be like tour costs too. So
yeah, tour costs. Like, well, here's the thing about these kind of costs. Like, and I think I have an interesting perspective coming from like publishing and music and all these other industries. Is that it always costs more than you expect. But it really costs less than you may expect, too. It depends on how you approach it. So $35,000
for tour. And if you're doing your job to put together I'm sure she's got a manager, and I'm sure that manager put together a decent tour for her. And the thing is, your costs are built into your like nightly take. I mean, it's built into the ticket cost. It's built into like door costs. I mean,
well, if they're smart, they go by guarantees.
She's got a guarantee that is covering all of her costs. So why the fuck doesn't she have a band that is covered under the guarantee? That's the whole reason you have guarantees, so your band gets paid.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on how many dates she's doing, like $35,000 isn't a lot split over. I mean, especially if you need a string section and a brass section.
Yeah, I'm sure tickets are like $50. So it's.
So it's like, I'm pretty sure the amount of dates she's doing and the number of venues and the number of tickets sold will easily cover the $35,000. So why the fuck isn't she paying it? Especially since she has cash up front to cover any costs ahead of time, which is usually the problem. The startup costs to get you out on the road, to have all your shit ready, to have your merch ready, to get all the product to take with you, and then it will pay off over time on the road, since she is one of the few successful touring acts that there is left in the world. But she's like acting like she can't do it. It'd be one thing if she was like, it'd be cool to have the fans play with me, so I want to do a tour where I invite friends and fans to play with me, but to then like try to say, well, it's going to cost me a lot of money to do it. Like, if she had not said that, it wouldn't have made her sound like such a stupid bitch, but she sounds like a stupid bitch now.
If she's smart, she'll whether or not she intended this in the beginning, she'll make it sound like, oh no, I was misunderstood, and plays it off rather than trying to stick to her guns, because that won't really make her a lot of new fans. It's going to be spun, because I think a lot of people kind of and you know, like, people like, well, let's say you, for instance, like where you're like, she's just some stupid bitch. And a lot of people out there don't like her stuff, don't understand why people like her stuff, and will jump on the first any opportunity and jump on somebody who has really silly looking painted on eyebrows. And
fuck yeah.
And go after it. And she'll have her fans who are going to stick by her and be like, "Blah, burlesque is awesome." And they're going to fight. And then people like me are going to be like, I don't really care either way. I respect her as a performer and entertainer. And that's pretty much how I fall on that one. I don't really care. I'm a big fan of her husband, but I also I try not to insult her too much by saying, why is she famous? She's married to Neil Gaiman. Because I only say that to be facetious. Like I said, I don't really think I think she's her own talent, her own performer. But she's usually, you know, kind of just considered to be sometimes I feel like I have to like her because I like Neil Gaiman, and I feel like I'm forced to. And if I say I don't like her, I don't care or not care for Amanda Palmer. I don't really give a shit. She's not even on my caring radar. I'm made to look like a dick because I must hate women. And it kind of goes on and on. I'm like, wow, okay, whatever. Whereas, I mean, somebody once told me I supported rape culture because I don't like Amanda Palmer. You figure the logic train on that one. So
that's because you talk a lot of stupid people, Steve.
Apparently, dude. Like, it was just some random person. It's like, basically, they made this bizarre logic thread of me not being into Amanda Palmer meant that I must have like kind of like a rape soup kitchen where rapists come in and they hang out, and I give them some rape soup and they go rape, and just a lot of raping going on. Apparently that's it. And now someone's gonna listen to this and go that I'm a dick anyway. So it's very interesting. And I follow the whole like wait and see kind of thing. And it's an interesting thing to talk about, but I don't know. I hope for her sake that it sort of pans out and she doesn't look like a total jerk for it. So, because she does look like kind of like a jerk right now, but
I will just enjoy her looking like a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause I don't like her music.
Awesome. Okay. Well, we should probably wrap it up, man. Cause this is like, let's do it for this for 20 minutes. And then we've been here for a long time.
I'd like to apologize to listeners for this being our first cast back after such a long break and you having to listen to this as the first cast back.
Yeah. I think we apologize about everyone. They should be kind of scared when we
There's a few one. That were That's... really entertaining, but I don't know.
I thought this one was pretty entertaining. I mean, I liked your take on the show and everything.
It's interesting more than it is entertaining. I don't think I had any fun jokes that are going to make all the people listen to this on the bus pee themselves with laughter or anything, but
true, but this is mouth fist, not laughter.
This is no explanation of porn to you.
Yeah, that was a pretty fun one actually.
So go if this did not please you, go back and listen to the Our Bodies Ourselves podcast and enjoy me explaining to Steve about all the varieties of porn that exist in modern society.
Oh, dear God. Like when I said earlier about that whole thing, girls getting wet comment, I really mean that I'm not that lewd. Like I could be crass, sick, disgusting, and downright tactless and horrible, but for comedic effect. But I'm rarely like perverse, and I'm not perverse at all. In fact, I don't even watch porn. So Ryan talks to me about pornography and the different stuff they do, and it's pretty interesting actually. So I have porn star friends and stuff too. It's just really weird, like how I just don't, it's like such a non thing to me. So anyway.
But yeah, sorry about the podcast.
Thanks
to the none of you that listened to it.
Thanks for tuning in, and hopefully you will tune into the next one, which should be shorter maybe.
And sooner. Since the last one, the last episode we did, our next episode was supposed to be about Prometheus, which came out in what, like April?
Maybe we should talk about Prometheus next episode. Better late than never, right? So it's like,
Coming home from Chicago on the plane, the guy next to me was watching it. I was trying not to look over at him watching it because it was making me. It was making me angry just watching another person watching Prometheus.
Okay, we'll discuss Prometheus at least for a little bit next mouth fist.
How about next April? Next April we'll next talk April. About Prometheus.
And I'll talk about Dread maybe too, maybe The Hobbit. So yeah. All right, well, until next time, dear listeners, all 3 to 6.2 of you, thanks for listening to Mouth Fist.
Thanks. Again, I'd like to apologize for what you just listened to, and hopefully next time will be better. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to leave them at the refreshed, slightly different, but exactly the same Media Gauntlet website via the comment section, or drop us a line at media@mediagauntlet.com, or use the little email form on the main page of Media Gauntlet that will do basically the exact same thing. But thanks very much, and we hope to talk to you again soon.